This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, to comment on remarks by the President of Russia, Vladimir Putin, at the most recent Valdai Club meeting. This is not unlike Davos, in which think tanks and politicians and journalists and, in general, Russian-spirited-minded people come together to assess the state of the civilization, the culture of Russia each year in Sochi on the Black Sea. So yes, this is a resort. However, this year, the professor points us to the speech by Mr. Putin, and although it had trendy moments talking about Washington, inside it is an important philosophy that the professor is going to help us understand. Eurasianist philosophy, Eurasianism. Professor, a very good evening to you. Eurasia is the world island stretching from the Atlantic coast to the Pacific coast. This vast amount of territory that controls billions of people, and the strength right now of Eurasia is somewhere between Beijing and Moscow and Berlin. I'm being general here because Eurasia changes its posture all the time. What is Eurasianism? What is it that the President of Russia was conveying to his audience at the Valdai Club? Good evening to you.
Good evening. This is a philosophy having its origins in the 19th century, I would say after the defeat of Napoleon, which has been constant in Russian philosophy since then, which was systematized by a very famous professor, Lev Gumilyov, whom Putin has been reading, and is now it's now the ideology of a political party led by someone named Dukin. But this is quite—it was quite remarkable to me because it's hard for me to imagine a even Charles de Gaulle talking about France, not to mention what I think Reagan might have been able to talk about America in vaguely philosophical terms. But when Putin started talking about who he was reading and what ideas he was having, I was astonished. And probably there are two ideas here. One is that there is a third continent, Eurasia, which is somewhere to the east of Western Europe and somewhere to the west of China. And one possible locus, perhaps its center would be in this great bowl that's formed by the Volga River and the Don Rivers, which has been a center of civilizations that rise and fall in the heart of Asia. It stresses a collective. It stresses culture and a Slavic culture which is based on community and reciprocity, and rather than on individualism. And although I don't consider Putin to be a great intellectual, it's interesting to me that as he sits there at the top of the power pyramid and wonders where should Russia go forward, he actually gets his hands on to a set of theories which have intellectual coherence, are applicable to the territory that he has, and are potentially popular, and would certainly be a lot better than what we had.
What we have here also is a man who's in his third term as president of Russia. Is he transforming himself into a philosopher? Is he moving beyond politics? Here's why I ask. I've been told that there's great concern for Putin's health. The people who attended the Valdai conference, I talked to one of them, Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute, said that in order to be in the room with Putin making his remarks, he was tested four times, although he's doubly vaccinated and quite well, thank you, four times in the course of the run-up to the Valdai Club meeting with Putin. And Putin is surrounded by a retinue of what I guess would be large, square-shouldered nurses. So The puzzle here is he sensing mortality? He's demonstrating what you'd have to say is excessive concern for a pandemic that we're all moving through like swimming through the ocean now with our understanding of a science and modernity and the vaccine, and yet Putin is not conducting himself in a similar fashion. So is there something going on with his approach to the world?
Well, I think what you say is he's sensing his own mortality. He devotes quite a bit of the speech, more than one would expect, to COVID. But I think that it's also he's trying to make sense of something which has caught his attention late in life, namely, what is this whole Russia, Slavic, Orthodox, what is this thing all about? Is it Europe? Is it Asiatic? And the answer is it's neither of those things, but it's a great, he uses the phrase melting pot. It's a great melting pot in the center of Eurasia, in which many different cultures can interact in a pacific and positive way. But it's distinct to both the Western love of individualism and the Chinese, what he refers to as the cruel, utter intolerance of the Chinese approach. I think it's quite interesting, because whatever else he may or may not be, but Putin here, he's a thermometer. In other words, he isn't making this up himself. He's talking to a lot of people.
We've talked about Russia as the pivot nation, as the heartland. So let's turn to the east, to Beijing. Is there discomfort in Moscow with Beijing, its concentration of power in the hands of one man, its closing its borders, its aggression towards its neighbors? Does that make Moscow uncomfortable, or is that an indifference when you're in the Kremlin?
No, I think that the Russians for hundreds of years have been very concerned about the potentialities of China as a power. They took the precaution of seizing much of the north, Kamchatka, and the whole Chinese seaboard down to Korea, which they still control. This was very, very wise. But I remember being there in 1969 at the time of the Damansky Island fighting and visiting. And if you talked about the Chinese, the Russians were scared. They don't want anything. Putin has said today or yesterday that there is no alliance between China and Russia. I've heard from a source that he's making it very clear that certain military technology is not going to be shared with China. And recently, when the Chinese and the Russian fleets exercised together, Putin, exercising his dominance over Xi, which he has now as the result of being the sole purveyor of energy, got Xi to send the Chinese Navy, along with the Russians, on a transit of the Sugaru Strait, which is of great importance. This is between Honshu and Hokkaido. Now, no one in America has any idea about it, but it strikes the Japanese as if the Russians and the Chinese had made a transit up the Mississippi River.
I'm speaking with Professor H.J. Mackinder about the speech that Vladimir Putin made at the Valdez Club. This is the philosophy think tank speculation political event each year at the Sochi Black Sea Resort.
It's going to be in New York next year, they say.
I want to turn to the story then of the Soviet Union that Vladimir Putin prospered in once upon a time, and what I've learned recently about how Stalin's interpretation of Russia may have distorted our understanding of Russia's authority and Russia's confidence in itself. When we come back, this is Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.